Hello, my friends. I'm Bill McLaughlin. Welcome to St. Paul Sunday.
St. Paul Sunday is produced by Minnesota Public Radio and made possible by a major grant from the Minnesota-based General Mills Foundation, supporting excellence in education, human services, and the arts. Additional funding has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and by this Public Radio International station. Join us today with our guests, Eighth Blackbird.
It's a matter of some interest to me how an ensemble settles upon a name for itself. I guess with big orchestras, which are attached to big cities, there's not much problem. Is the Berlin Philharmonic or the Philadelphia Orchestra or the Metropolitan Opera is easy enough to get to. With string quartets, very often the composers' names are brought into play. You find the Alban Berg Quartet, a Borodin Quartet. But we have an ensemble with us today, six marvelous young musicians who've chosen to call themselves Eighth Blackbird from a line of poetry by Wallace Stevens. And let's meet the members of the ensemble, and we can find out how they chose their name and what it is that they do, which is really quite wonderful. Let's start with the two string players. Our violinist and later violist will be Matthew Alberts. Great to meet you and hear you.
Good to meet you, too.
Our cellist is Nicholas Fotinos.
Hi.
Great to meet you. Our two wind players, starting with the flutist, it's Molly Alicia Barth. Nice to meet you.
Hello.
And our clarinetist, Michael Macaferri.
Hello.
And our percussionist, Matthew Duval, back there, overlooking Hello. A great territory and variety of instruments.
They keep me busy. Yeah.
Yeah. And for the piano, Lisa Kaplan, yours is perhaps the most familiar of the instruments, but I notice now that you have the music rack so that you can read the music, but it's taken out and it's put off at a funny angle. Are you going to dive into the innards of the piano?
Well, I'm sure I'm going to try. I'm always have unorthodox methods of playing the strings, plucking them and tweaking them and putting things on them. Yeah.
So. Well, folks, if what Lisa's doing doesn't remind you of your early piano lessons studying, say, Clementi Sonatinas or Hanin or Czerny or something like that, that's because the ensemble Eighth Blackbird is an ensemble like no other. And now let's find out, where did you get the name and how? And how long have you been together? Tell us about yourself. Who is Eighth Blackbird?
Well, Eighth Blackbird, it's an idea that I came up with. I was an English major in college.
This is Matthew Albert, by the way.
Right. I was studying the poetry of Wallace Stevens, and there was one particular poem that really stuck out, and its images were so vivid, the descriptions really stuck with me. The poem is called 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird, and the eighth stanza of this poem had these musical references. The first couple lines go, I know noble accents and lucid, inescapable rhythms. And I love that idea of nobility and a rhythm, inescapable rhythm, something that you just gotta have. It's, mm-hmm. You can't get away from it. It chases you around the block or whatever. And I just thought that Eighth Blackbird, referring to that poem, would be a really inspiring and different name for a group.
We were really struggling to come up with a name at the point that we finally did. And I just remember seeing Matt in the mailroom that afternoon, and I said, oh, Matt, have you thought of any names? We need a name. We have to have a name. We have this concert, you know. He said, well, yeah, I thought of one. I said, great, what is it? And he said, Eighth Blackbird. And that's all he said. He didn't say anything else.
There. So no
said,
explanation.
Right. I said, what's that? And then he explained it, and I said, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And see, that's actually one of the best points, is that people are like, what's that?
Right.
And so we get talking about it, and it sticks in people's minds more than the XYZ quartet.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. So. Let's get to hear Eighth Blackbird now. The first piece you're going to play, let's hear it without talking about it very much. We'll let the audience make up its own mind. It's a piece by a young composer called David Schober. I gather he was a classmate of yours at Oberlin for a while.
He was a classmate and a roommate of mine, actually.
Okay. And this is a set of variations, but even though I looked at the score for 4 or 5 minutes, which is not enough, it's a fairly complex score, I couldn't find a theme and variations in it. How does he develop it?
Is there a theme?
There's no theme.
Yeah.
It's just a set of variations.
On what? A couple of notes or a couple of different pitches?
Right.
I think. You hear these notes come back time and time again.
Right.
But that's about it.
All right, folks. This is not Generation X music. This is music for our own time, which now is extending into the 21st century. I don't think there's anyone in this room except me who's over 30 years old, and with the exception of one of the composers who's a family relation, none of the composers are much more than about 40 at most.
That's right.
Here's David Schober's Variations from the year 1998, played by Eighth Blackbird. That's a remarkable piece of music. The composer is David Schober, born in 1974 in a small town in Minnesota, studied at Oberlin. He's currently at the University of Michigan, I guess, where he's been studying with Bill Bolcom and a couple of the other composers.
Yeah, Michael Dougherty there. Bunch of them up there, actually.
This was a performance of the ensemble Eighth Blackbird. This piece, Variations of David Schober, was written for Eighth Blackbird. It's remarkable, the colors. He lets you know in the first measure or measure and a half, I haven't seen quite how it's written, exactly what the ball game is.
Yeah,
I
said, yeah,
it's really
good. There's not exactly a theme to this, except that we have the cello play a pitch. It's taken over by pizzicato on the violin. It goes to the flute, who throws it back and forth to the clarinet. And is that flexitone you're playing, or some vibraphone?
Vibraphone.
Bowed, though, was it?
Right.
Yeah, I can't see it. And in fact, the two of you are playing the wind instruments, Molly and Michael. You're actually turned away from us. And at a certain point, you're turned back toward the percussion. So your sound sort of like goes into his and back forth. And then you wheel slowly at a certain point later in the piece toward us. And is all that choreography in the score, or have you worked that out in the course of performing it and studying it?
Not in the score at all.
No, that's just our interpretation, really. And actually, once we worked on the piece, we did use music, and we decided it would be fun to do from memory. And after we memorized it, the choreography just sort of lent itself naturally. I mean, the music is just, it works really well together.
I see. So you're not glued toward looking down toward the stage.
Right.
So you start to look toward your colleague to play with.
You can look at each other.
It helps the audience see the connections.
Exactly. Try to just illuminate the score a little bit more.
The barriers. I mean, it's not much of a barrier, but it's just a little thing.
The funny thing is, I was imagining people listening now who cannot see any of this.
Right.
But the connections are felt so strongly that it's a kind of process. I think it goes through. You learn it. You start to connect in a different way. And the effect is that people can now hear it over the radio. It's pretty magical.
That's what we try to do.
Yeah.
Tell me when you got going as an ensemble. When were you founded? This is funny when you ask a group the average age of which is about 26 or 7.
Right. January of 1996 was our official come together date.
And you were playing as part of the new music project at Oberlin Conservatory.
Right. We had been put together by the conductor, Timothy Weiss, of the Contemporary Music Ensemble there. And he had put the six of us together, basically, and conducted us. And we became unconducted when he was unable to attend a dress rehearsal. And that was about January 96.
But are you still living in Oberlin, or no? You've moved to...
No, we're currently at the University of Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. And as part of a project there, are you
all... We're working on an artist diploma in chamber music there, and that's about done.
Okay, well, here's a goofy question. Mm-hmm. Pretty soon, you're all going to be out of school. What happens then?
Good question.
We're trying to do this as a full-time professional endeavor. Mm-hmm.
Well, there are two things. You play extraordinarily well, and I think it's extremely interesting music. So if you can keep going, what an amazing thing this will be to watch.
Yes.
We've been very lucky so far.
We have.
Yeah. Let's hear some more music. This is another composer whose name I'm learning, courtesy of your bringing it to the program. This is Ricardo Zone Muldoon. What sort of name is Zone Muldoon? Sounds German and Irish, but he's from...
He's Mexican.
It makes sense. So born in Mexico City in 1962. What is this piece that you're going to play? Tell us a little bit about what we should listen for.
Okay. This piece is called Paramo, and it is intended as an overture to a song cycle or to a larger work, and it's based on a poem or a book.
A novel.
Mm-hmm. Called Pedro Paramo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Ricardo has taken the sense of time that is in that work of art, and he's played with that. You hear a lot of clicking and tapping and bonging as if a clock were going in disarray. I mean, it's like a Dali clock,
haywire.
You know, very surreal, very, it is going haywire at times as well.
I can't wait to hear it. Here's music now of Ricardo Zone Muldoon, Paramo, played by Eighth Blackbird. Thank you. Interesting the way those wind chimes keep sounding. Like the frame between the piece and reality outside the piece are blurred.
Yeah.
Pretty wonderful. This is music by composer Ricardo Zornbaldun, who was born in Mexico, studied with George Crumb at the University of Pennsylvania, taught for a while as visiting scholar at Harvard University, is now in the composition faculty at the Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. The piece is called Paramo, after a novel by Juan Rulfo, and was played for us by H. Blackbird. What a variety of sounds. I want to talk for a moment to the captain of the Schlagwerke back there, the man in the kitchen, Matthew Duvall. I just wonder, Matthew, if you could tell us some of the more interesting and unusual sounds and just play each one in this so we could hear. What are these ones that look like inverted soup kettles here?
Well, that's exactly what we have. I was driving through Columbus, and I saw a restaurant supply store off the side of the highway. So I swerved off the road, went inside and started banging this and that, and found these large soup, I guess they're soup pots, so I cut a hole in the bottom, hung them upside down, and I hit them near the top, furthest away from the what would normally be the bottom of the pot, and they sound kind of gong-like. The Ricardo, the composer, was rooting around our studio one afternoon and stumbled across them sitting in a corner and asked me what they were, and I showed him, and a few months later, of course, the piece showed up and there they were.
There's some more or less standard, especially Latin American instruments.
Absolutely. Well, there's a cabasa used in the piece. There's some claves. There's a tam-tam that, this is kind of an interesting sound that I scrape.
You slide along
with
it.
With a triangle beater at one point, rather than hitting it with a mallet.
Tam-tam is like a great Asian gong. That sound when you strike it with the mallet.
Yeah. But rather than hitting it with this large soft stick, I scrape the back of it with a metal piece of metal.
Yeah.
It's a very nice sound.
And you can combine the two. Yeah, you could have the ring of the gong with that scrape.
Sure, of course. You could activate them at the same time. Sure. All kinds of options.
I was noticing, too, with Lisa, that there's one very striking passage where you're inside the piano and it's producing almost a bell quality, like a great cathedral bell, but a little bit altered. I wonder, could you play that for us
again? Sure.
I loved it. Tell us, you're playing the piano with your left hand, the keyboard with your left hand.
Right. I'm striking the notes with my left hand, and with my right hand, I'm finding the correct partial on the string. So I place my finger on the string, and it produces different pitches. You can produce lots of different tones, and so...
Show us that way. I mean, can you play just one note on the keyboard and change the sounds over?
And then play the note by itself. Right, so that was all all the same note.
Okay, so that's a little bit like a violinist who puts his finger on the string and cuts the string, say, in half or in quarters or whatever it is as a result.
Yes, these are, on the piano, they're called harmonics, which I think is very similar to the violin if you put your finger kind of lightly on it. It will resonate more, but still make the pitch different.
Would you do me a favor then, play just a little bit of that section with the two of you playing, just to get the color, because it was marvelous what you were doing together, I thought.
Sure.
It's great.
And that's with the cabasa, the harmonics and the piano and the cabasa.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. Well, it's kind of difficult, I suppose, to envision all of these instruments, although it's always fun to use your imagination when you hear about things on the radio. If you'd like actually to look at some pictures of the instruments employed by 8th Blackbird, you can check out their marvelous website. And I think the easiest way is to tell you to look at our website, and we'll make a link. You'll find us at stpaulsunday.org. If you've just tuned in the last couple of minutes, I should say that we're making this wonderful program with the ensemble 8th Blackbird. I'm Bill McLaughlin, and you're tuned to St. Paul Sunday. We're turning now to, I don't know whether it's a signature piece, but it's a piece, you're all nodding your head. Well, it's a piece called 13 Ways.
Right.
Now, here I'm interested because we have Matthew Albert, who's our violinist and violist. The composer here is Thomas Albert. Is that your pop?
Yeah, that's my father.
Tell me who he is.
My dad teaches composition and is the associate dean at Shenandoah Conservatory, which is in Virginia, in the town Winchester, where I grew up.
How did your pop come to write this piece? I mean, had you chosen the name for your ensemble?
We actually had chosen the name. We had chosen the name 8th Blackbird. And so very soon after we had decided to stick together and work this out as a career together, my dad said, how about if I write a piece for you and I'd like to base it on this poem, because there have been a lot of settings of the poem vocally for people to sing the poetry while people play, But there have been very few instrumental settings, if any others. I don't know if there have any.
I don't think there are.
Yeah, so that's what my dad wanted to do.
Anyone who's tuned in late and doesn't know which poem we're talking about, we should say it's a very famous poem of Wallace Stevens called 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird.
Yeah.
And there are 13 short stanzas. I don't have it here in front of me. I suppose the longest is maybe 5 or 6 lines.
Right, that's all. From 2 lines or just a few words to 5 or 6 lines. Yeah.
And so what your father did is sort of make 13 pieces altogether.
Right.
In this performance today, we don't have quite time to play the whole piece, so we're going to play 3 sets of 3 settings each, I guess.
Basically 9 of them, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if somebody would read the first stanza so we could get that opening image that Wallace Stevens used, because you're not actually going to play this piece. How does Stevens start the poem?
Sure. Among 20 snowy mountains, the only moving thing was the eye of the blackbird.
Uh-huh.
That's the first verse.
That's the first stanza.
It's so neat that he talks about the eye and not the blackbird as the thing that's moving. You know, you have these huge mountains and then focusing on an eye of a bird. He's very careful with the words he chooses because there's so few of them.
Right.
It's really neat.
It's so evocative. You can see clearly an image in your mind through each of these stanzas. And I think Thomas Albert also takes that very literally and
he depicts it musically. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear this piece. We're going to hear now 3 sets of 3 short pieces each, a total of 9 short pieces, and the 6 members of 8th Blackbird will give you each apropos verse right before we're going to play the piece of music.
Yeah.
So we're starting now with the second of these, and we're going to hear now music of Thomas Albert, 13 Ways, played by 8th Blackbird.
I was of 3 minds, like a tree, in which there are 3 blackbirds. The blackbird whirled in the autumn winds. It was a small part of the pantomime. Thank you. A man and a woman are one. A man and a woman and a blackbird are one.
Icicles filled the long window with barbaric glass. The shadows of the blackbird crossed it to and fro. The mood traced in the shadow an indecipherable cause.
O thin men of Haddam, why do you imagine golden birds? Do you not see how the blackbird walks around the feet of the women about you?
I know noble accents and lucid, inescapable rhythms. But I know, too, that the blackbird is involved in what I know.
Connecticut, in a glass coach. Once a fear pierced him, in that he mistook the shadow of his equipage for blackbirds.
The river is moving. The blackbird must be flying.
It was evening all afternoon. It was snowing, and it was going to snow. The blackbird sat in the cedar limbs.
Remarkable music. It's a piece called 13 Ways. This is music of Thomas Albert. It's inspired by the Wallace Stevens poem, 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird. And you heard the members of the ensemble, Eighth Blackbird, reading the verses, the stanzas, right before each little evocation. They're like tiny musical portraits or pictures after each one. A wonderful piece. And that's your old man. Well, pass your old man some congratulations to me. He's a wonderful composer. I love that piece. I'm talking now with Matthew Albert, who's our violinist and violist, too, on that piece. Right. And the piece was written by his father for this ensemble. It's a great piece. Boy, to have an in-house composer with that quality. Pretty great thing. Just a remarkable combination of things. There's so many pieces. We just heard, I should say, excerpts. We didn't hear all 13 of the pieces. We heard 9 of them, 3 sets of 3. There were a couple that stick out. I suppose the big hit tune is number 8. It sounds like, Blackbird singing in the night.
Right.
Got Lennon McCartney going up against Appalachian Spring. And Pickle, my word, Miss Molly, you misbehave in a most egregious fashion. Oh, it's wonderful what you're doing. But you know, the one that really took my heart away is perhaps the simplest. I think it's number 4. It's that 5-4-1 mark. Mm-hmm. I think it's Carthage. And let me get the lines. A man and a woman are one. A man and a woman are blackbird are one. Could we hear a little bit of that? Just maybe the opening. Because what your father is doing here is quite wonderful. He sets up duos. There's a duo of the. It's alto flute you're playing on that, I think, Molly.
Alto
and is it clarinet? Yeah, it is clarinet. And then you're playing on viola and cello.
Viola,
listen to the way he sets this. It's. I wouldn't say a lullaby, but it is deeply sensuous, sweet music.
Yes.
This is the fourth. A man, a woman, and a blackbird are one. To stop it so much. There's an old Russian friend who played in an orchestra when I was in Kansas City. He came up to me once after we were doing that Ravel piece, and he said, you know, Bill, this is the music of dreaming. Mm. And I was like, this music feels like dreaming to me. So sweet.
I think when we're playing it, we kind of just really get into the mood of it. And it's very beautiful, and I just like to close my eyes and listen.
Yeah. It's so loving and warm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very warm.
Yeah. Wonderful piece.
Chance to look into each other's eyes. Too, which is always nice.
Yeah. There is a very nice feeling of, it goes more than comradeship, there's a kind of love about the six of you when you play. It's rare.
Okay. No, you're right.
I know sometimes you must have tremendous discussions, let's call it, or even arguments, because that's the way it is when you're trying to work so hard and so close to the point. But there's a wonderful feeling of sweet optimism that comes from the group, plus tremendous musicianship.
Thank you.
It's great to make your acquaintance. I think we're going to have great fun. I mentioned earlier in the show that we're going over the next day up into northern Minnesota. Yeah. I'm going to take these six young bloods up there, and we're going to go terrorize the school children. I think it'll be great, and I think they'll be so taken with your playing and your enthusiasm, and also they're going to have a kick counting all the percussion instruments. I just we'll take inventory before we get on the bus to go up there. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming, and please do come and visit us again, because I know that next time you come, you know, in a year or two or three, you'll have commissioned a whole lot of new pieces, so there'll be wonderful music.
Right.
From, you know, that we'll be able to hear from you and no one else. It was a great program now.
Thank you.
We'd love to come back.
Our two wind players are Molly Alicia Barth, who's playing flutes all the way from piccolo down to alto, and Michael Ferry, who's playing clarinet, bass clarinet. Matthew Albert was playing violin and viola. Nicholas Fortinas was playing cello. Matthew Duval was playing more percussion instruments than we know how to count. And Lisa Kaplan was our pianist today. They make up the ensemble Eighth Blackbird. It was a wonderful show. Folks, if you'd like to find out more about Eighth Blackbird, you can check out our website. We'll link you to Eighth Blackbird's website. You can find us at stpaulsunday.org. If you'd like to drop us a line, you can do that by email. Our email address is sunday@mpr.org. We're also answering questions now, beginning to do this. Some questions you can write in about the program. We'll answer them on the website. You can also write to us, of course, using the U.S. Postal Service. We are St. Paul Sunday, care of Minnesota Public Radio, St. Paul, Minnesota 55101. And that's the show for this week. Thanks again to Eighth Blackbird. Please come back again soon.
Thank you.
And you folks, make sure to join us next week. Meantime, stay tuned in for all of the great programming coming up on this public radio station.
St. Paul Sunday is made possible by a major grant from the Minnesota-based General Mills Foundation, supporting excellence in education, human services, and the arts. Additional funding has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and by this Public Radio International station. St. Paul Sunday is produced by Minnesota Public Radio in the Maud Moon Weyerhaeuser Music Studio. Your host for the series is Bill McLaughlin. The senior producer is Mary Lee. The music producer is Steve Barnett. And the associate producer is Vaughn Ormseth. The engineer is Tom Mudge, and the production engineer is Michael DeMarc. The St. Paul Sunday website is produced by Nancy Blakestead. This is Marianne Sullivan.
been listening to music of Manuel de Falla as performed by Kim Kashkashian, one of the selections on St. Paul Sunday's newest compact disc, Mixed Company. Visit our website at stpaulsunday.org to order your copy of Mixed Company, Music from St. Paul Sunday. This recording includes performances of Gil Shaham, the Juilliard String Quartet, and many more, all recorded for this program and many not available elsewhere. Order your copy of Mixed Company from the St. Paul Sunday website, stpaulsunday.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.